And now, the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Let's start the show.
Welcome back to the Last Word on Habs podcast. I'm Connor LaPalme, and as always, I'm joined by Johannes Wilden. How's it going, Johannes?
Connor, it's only a high stick if they call it a high stick.
Yes, this is true. And, you know, you take
it. And if they don't call it and don't challenge it, then we eke out a victory. And you know what? After the week we've had, we'll take it.
Exactly. Yeah, beggars can't be choosers at this point if you're a Canadiens fan. So, you know, and I mean, the one thing I'll say quickly, and obviously we're going to talk about it a little bit later, but, you know, I've rarely seen the high sticks ever get overturned on replay. Just because there's some reason, it's like in football where they don't necessarily have a camera shooting down the first down marker. So, you know, sometimes you can challenge a spot of a ball. They don't have a camera directly down the line. So it's hard to see if they get the yard or not. It's the same thing with a high stick. There's no camera line. Even though it would make sense to have a camera that sort of shoots directly at that line. So if you see the stick hit the puck above it, you know, it's just one of those weird things where you have all this technology and it's still, they have ways to not make it work properly. But it worked out in the Canadiens' favor for once, so let's roll with it.
Let's do it. We'll take it.
Yeah.
How's life with you in beautiful Montreal?
It's better today. It was pretty freezing cold Friday and Saturday, so it made things tough in terms of, as you know, with kids, and especially during COVID, keeping them sane and unferal, it's tough when it's too cold to find things to do outside. We made it work a little bit yesterday. Today it's a little bit nicer, so thankfully for that. But yeah, we're hanging on, just dealing with curfews and things like that still. But it's just the new normal that everyone's always adjusting to. How about up in Vermont? How about down in Vermont?
We sort of get the same weather that you do. Sometimes it's a day later, but yeah, it was really cold yesterday. My son and I went out for a little skate on our outdoor backyard rink, but we didn't last for much longer than 30 minutes because it was so cold. Today we're going to go for, it's a place called Lake Maury, and they have a 4-mile track of ice and tons of pickup hockey games everywhere. So we're going to bring our sticks and drive about an hour down the road and go for a skate, maybe get a hot chocolate. We're looking forward to it. We are looking forward to it.
That definitely sounds like a nice way to spend a day. So I'm a little jealous, but enjoy it while you can. So
Exactly.
I guess now, speaking of pickup hockey, I guess we should pivot now to the professional hockey that we had to witness this week. So last week we talked about how this was a big test week for the Canadiens, and sort of they were matching up against two of the better teams in their division, and, you know, could they bounce back after struggling against Ottawa? And I guess the answer is no. I will start at the beginning. They played the Leafs at the Bell Center on Wednesday, and it didn't go that great. It started well. Montreal jumped out to a 1-0 lead, but then for some reason the team decided to keep up its... I don't know if it's because now the Senators put a book out on the Canadiens and people know how to play them, but scoring goals has all of a sudden become a real challenge for this team that was, to start out the year, one of the highest scoring teams, if not the highest scoring team in the league. And now it seems a little bit like last year where, you know, it's a struggle to put two pucks in the net, you know? So the Canadiens kind of dropped the game. I don't know how you saw it, but that game, I mean, it wasn't a very good game in terms of excitement, and it was pretty boring against the Leafs, which is a bit surprising, considering, you know, everyone was expecting a bit of a replay of the first game of the season where it was a bit of a track meet. But yeah, I was just kind of disappointed the way that game unfolded and how the Canadiens kind of couldn't establish their offensive identity at all.
I mean, I've definitely seen lots of sort of concerns that the Canadiens look like a team from years past in terms of stifled offense, and it's more like just a general defeatist vibe. Like, there's just no energy or urgency, and it just, like, bad passes and people aren't skating. And you know, last night notwithstanding, especially the third period, I think we saw a lot of mediocre hockey from the Canadiens this week. Part of how I'm thinking about it is, it reminds me of, like, the second round of the playoffs when things start to tighten up a little bit. You know, like, it's almost as if because you're playing the same teams, the first couple of games tend to be more wide open as people sort of feel each other out. And I think, you know, whether it's the Edmonton game or the Leafs game this week or even last night, it just seems as though everything is tightening up. And the Canadians have not yet made that switch in their mind. And I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but I do think last night in the third period, we sort of saw what this team might do when a team is playing them really close and you have sort of a tougher, more smothering game. But I don't disagree that there's cause for concern. I think Nick Suzuki has slowed down. I think Kotkaniemi is in quite a bit of trouble. I don't think I've seen Phil Deneau play this badly for this longly. Longly is not a word, but you know what I mean? It's there is a lot of problems up and down the lineup that are definitely cause for concern. Now, obviously, the Canadians have a week off, and we could talk about what they could do to get back on track. But I don't think if you're a Habs fan, you were very happy with the play this week, notwithstanding the late goal from Galley last night.
Yeah, I mean, you can almost say it's been maybe not exact quite 2 weeks, because obviously the Canadians know how to beat up on the Vancouver Canucks. But, you know, the two games against Ottawa were not really reassuring. And then, you know, the three games this week, they won the one on Saturday fine, or yesterday. But, you know, I wouldn't also consider Toronto and Edmonton these defensive stalwart teams. So that's the other thing that's a bit concerning, is if teams have, like I said, if Ottawa somehow put out the book on the Canadians, then it's on the coaching staff to sort of, like you said, to come up with something to counteract that, because if it's that easy to shut the team down, then, you know, we're in a bit of a problem, if the Canadians are in a bit of trouble. Although I will say, you said like the third period, they kind of, against Toronto on Saturday, they kind of bounced back. Both in all the games, they had moments where they seemed like they kicked up their gear just a little bit and were kind of dominating and pressing, and they couldn't score. So that was just, like I said, it just, there was a few little things the last, you know, 5-6 games that kind of just made me, and I'm not the only one, it made me think of last year where the Canadians, everything was a struggle. The power play has gone completely dead, and that's another problem, considering now they have actual, you know, it seems like they have actual talent on the power play. The fact that they've gone ice cold again is a bit of a problem. And it seemed like the last week, or, you know, last week, 10 days, they've been overly reliant on, you know, having their goalie keep them in these games where they can only give up one or no goals, because the Canadians have not scored over two goals since the last game against the Canucks. It's, you know, so it's, obviously, the caveat here is, you know, teams go through slumps, these things happen. Even though it's a compressed schedule, it's still a long season. You know, you can't expect your team to score 6-7 goals every night. You know, this isn't 1984 hockey or whatever. But I guess, just like you said, is the way they were playing, it reminded me of how I think I expected them. No, it didn't remind me, but it's like, because there were so many new faces and things, and there was no training camp, I would expect them to look this sloppy. And that's what they kind of had looked like this past week. Like you said, missing passes, running into each other. No one seemed to know where they were going or where anyone was going. They seemed like the chemistry wasn't there. So it seemed like this is what they should have looked like at the beginning of the year, with these guys sort of getting to know each other. And it just seems so odd that this is the kind of thing that's happening after, you know, 13, 14, 15 games where they had looked so cohesive and organized and, you know, had all this chemistry. So it's just frustrating. Again, it's frustrating.
I think that's a great point. I think it's a great point. And if you reversed the first seven games with the last seven games, I don't think anyone would be concerned, because they would have started sort of slow and then picked up. And in fact, what we saw was a team that looked unbeatable through the first 10 games to a team that's looked, you know, barely mediocre over the last seven. So I just think, you know, I just think it's, you know, as you say, it's a long season. We all have, you know, Montreal Canadiens PTSD from years previous, and it's just so easy to slip back into that mindset. And this is a point that others have certainly made, but, like, this is a very different team. What I think, what hasn't changed is the coaching staff. And I think that's where I wonder, you know, that's the next logical place to go for people who are generating content as part of the outrage machine related to the Montreal Canadiens. But I just think I'm very curious to see what they do next week after the break and after a chance to sort of practice. I think it's important to note, like, when you're playing a game every other day, there's no time to practice. So you're really not working on new things. You're not really developing, you know, new team concepts. You're just sort of like trying to get your rest, trying to get your reps in to set up again for the next game. So with a little bit more time off, it'll be interesting to see what stylistic changes get made. But I think to your how you started this conversation is if this last week was a test for the Montreal Canadiens, I think they failed it.
Yeah, I was supposed to see how, you know, the Canadiens matched up against two of the better teams, and yeah, they failed. And I guess it was how they failed is also the way it kind of like we kind of been already talking about it, how they played. It, like I said, reminding a lot of people of last year. Very discouraging, especially the Edmonton game. I know you want to get into the qualities of Edmonton goaltender Mike Smith a little bit, who I don't think is a very good goalie, and I don't think Edmonton is a very is not a very good defensive team. And Montreal, despite their number of shots, which, I mean, if you think back to last year, was a big thing everyone talked about. I mean, the team would say, well, we got a lot of shots. And yes, you know what? You got a lot of shots, but how many chances? I think at one point they had like almost 20-something shots and one chance. So it's, you know, it looks good. Everyone, like, you know, everyone's saying, oh, Mike Smith is dialed in. And I think I saw the Canadiens take a shot from not quite the point, but like between the point and the circle from the boards. I think I saw like that shot happen like 8 times and no one was in front of the net. And it just sort of a weak little shot. Like, it was just a frustrating game because
Go ahead. Yeah, look, I don't disagree with that, but I would just say Smith stopped a pretty significant flurry in the first period. He had a couple big saves in the second, and he stopped that sort of power play late in the third. Did the Canadiens look good? No, but I would say Mike Smith looked a lot better than Freddie Anderson did the night before against Toronto. So I just think, you know, the storyline about Smith being the second coming is probably overstating it. But I don't think a goalie who shuts out the Montreal Canadiens and stops 38 shots, whether they be high-scoring chances or not, can be dismissed. I think, did the Canadiens make it hard on him? Absolutely not. And in fact, my understanding is he had to have the emblem off the center of his jersey restitched on because so many pucks have been trying to hit it off.
Fair point.
You with me on that?
Yes. I'm not saying he didn't make big saves. I don't want to understate. I know I'm saying he's not a very good goalie. Obviously, he's a very good goalie. He plays in the NHL. But I just mean, I guess it's just you're watching people. Like, when you're watching the broadcast, and if a goalie's playing well, and by well I mean stopping pucks, he should stop because they're all visible and they're all outside of the slot or the whatever they call that, danger, the home plate area. Then, yeah, but he's doing his job. I'm not saying he didn't, you know, there was that Nick Suzuki breakaway he stopped in the first period. He did make some big saves, but it reminded me a bit of the games against Ottawa where Matt Murray played well, but if you were actually watching a bit closer, he wasn't playing that well. It's just Montreal couldn't get anything, any net front pressure because there were rebounds to be had, there were plays to be had, but they couldn't get into that home plate area. And that's a problem the Canadiens have had for, you know, before this season, a long time. So again, that was just a bit of the frustrating thing about watching them and saying, like, this, like you said, I've seen this movie before, and it's even doubled down if I've seen the hot start and then ice cold nosedive before too. So that's a little thing, like you said, there's a bit of PTSD.
Oh yeah, that's part of the playbook.
That's
sure.
And there's definitely the PTSD.
No, I mean,
yeah.
I take your point. I'm not, you know. Obviously,
I get what you're saying.
Team is always better than their worst game and worse than their best game. What I don't want to see any more of is blaming the reverse retro jerseys.
No.
I am pro those jerseys. I take the point that their pants don't and helmets don't match with the darker blue. But I am concerned that if they lose one more game in the retro jerseys, we're never going to see them again. And that would be a shame. Because those are top three, I think, of the reverse retro.
They
brought out. I don't know. We haven't talked about this.
Are
you in on those jerseys?
They're fine. I mean, like most of the Adidas jerseys, they're better than most of the Adidas jerseys when Adidas is designing these either the retro reverse or these like third jerseys that seem like incredibly uninspired and just kind of bleh. Most of the reverse retros I'm not a huge fan of. There's a few that I like, but most of them are just kind of, I don't know, they don't do it for me for some reason. I mean, I can't go through all of them in my head right now, but I know, I think I like, off the top of my head, I remember I liked the Pittsburgh with the Pittsburgh down the front. I liked the old 90s one. I liked the Rangers, not the Rangers, the Bruins one. I thought the yellow was nice. I didn't like a lot of them, and I've not been a fan of Adidas putting their stamp on NHL uniforms in general. So, you know, the Habs one I think is nice. I like the idea of it. I really think it's kind of a lazy thing to sort of have them not match up the blue that they already wear. You know, if you're going to do that, maybe have different pants and a different helmet to sort of go with it. I just think it looks a little budget, if you know what I mean? Like a little hand-me-down because the stuff doesn't match. But the jersey itself, I think, is aesthetically very nice. And I think the bigger problem, if you're going to worry about that retro reverse, would be for some reason the Canadiens can't play in the Bell Centre anymore. They don't like to win in the Bell Centre. Going back to last year even, and it's been a bit of a problem the last... I mean, I think
it's the red.
I guess. Apparently the red is just too jarring for them, because that, I think, is the bigger takeaway. For some reason, the Canadiens, even when there's no fans there, have a hard time playing on home ice the last... I think I checked it. It was like 3 of the last 4 years or something like that. It's been not very good. So, I mean, it doesn't help the Canadiens were not very good either, but you figure the Bell Centre is supposed to be this big advantage. Everyone talks about how great it is to play there and all the fans, but it doesn't seem to provide the Canadiens with a huge advantage the last few seasons. So maybe we should look into that. Maybe find a way to bring the ghosts from the Forum over to the Bell Centre.
I mean, it's just weird when there's no fans that would make a difference in terms of how you play. But it's...
maybe it's the locker room.
I think we're just sort of grasping at straws, because it's not clear... Just as it's not clear how Tyler Toffoli was scoring every time he shot in the first, you know, 5 or 6 games, it's not clear why Kokkonen just looks like he's skating in mud. Or, look, let's deal with some positives. We're talking to Habs fans here, right? Let's deal with some positives. Josh Anderson, every single game, looks good. He had one bad game, I think, a couple weeks ago, where he just didn't sort of look into it, but he creates chances, he scores, he hits. I really, as much as my son likes Max Domi, there is no doubt in my mind about who won that trade. He is looking utterly fantastic. I don't think Romanov had a particularly good week. I don't think Suzuki had a particularly good week. It was nice to see Toffoli score. It was nice to see Gallagher get rewarded for what has been a lot of effort, but not much production. What did you think of Tatar being not benched, but
scratched,
but drawing out of the game last night?
Yeah. Well, something had to change. I feel, I guess it kind of sucks that it's him, because, you know, he has been a bit... I mean, it's hard to place the blame on one player when the whole team has kind of been... The whole team's offense is dried up, save, like you mentioned, Josh Anderson seems to be one of the only guys consistently game in and game out that's seems like he's trying. I know everyone's trying, but you know what I mean? You can see that he's trying to make things happen. I mean, I know they can't because they don't have a replacement, but I mean, Phil Deneau has not really been very good for the Canadiens this year. You know, he has his, like, I know he had a really nice assist on the Toffoli goal, but I think that's his pretty much his lone highlight, I think. Obviously, I mean, no one's expecting him to score 20 goals or anything like that, but there's just something about him that seems off. Maybe it's the contract thing, but usually guys in contract years tend to blow up, and maybe it's weighing on him heavily. And it's just not funny, but now everyone's sort of saying, you know, there was a report in the offseason that he was offered five years, $30 million or something like that, or a contract in this offseason that he...
It was $30 million. I wasn't sure about whether it was 5 or 6, but I know that wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
And obviously he has had a very slow start. And with COVID and the down year, that starts to look like a pretty bad decision. And it does look as though he's... I don't know. It does look like it's weighing on him a little bit. You know, it's hard to get into the pop psychology by watching the game, but...
But even on the
defense, I think we underplay the psychological dimension of the game. I think we focus a lot on speed and skill and, you know, release and dangle and all that other nonsense. But how you mentally prepare for the game and how things affect you, I think, is incredibly important. And it's hard not to imagine that being relevant for him.
Yeah, for sure. And I think deep down he doesn't want to leave. I think he likes being with the Canadiens. I think that's part of it, because maybe the writing he sees is, maybe for him the writing's a bit on the wall with Kokkinen and Suzuki kind of supplanting him in that sort of top line role. It's tricky. I mean, it's always, you're never going to know what's going on in someone's head unless they tell you. I just mean, even things he's usually pretty solid at, like, not that he's fallen off a cliff defensively or in the faceoff circle, but it just seems it's all a little off. And then when he's in the offensive zone, sometimes it seems like he's trying a little too hard to prove that he can be, you know, everyone says, you know, your first line center should get X number of points, right? And so it seems like he's trying to make things happen too much sometimes, or at least that's how it felt maybe last week, whereas this week he felt more invisible. So, I don't know. Something's going on. But I think if the Canadiens are actually going to have to, if they're going to be serious, he's going to have to sort of figure it out, because they can't have, you know, sort of their best, one of their best two-way players sort of not fully engaged. It's going to be a problem for the team long, you know, down the long term. So hopefully he figures it out. But back to Tatar, I mean, someone had to come out, I think, because something was, it just wasn't working. You hate that it's a kind of Tatar, because it made me think about sort of how things went down in Vegas. Not that he's struggled with the Canadiens, but, you know, this year something's kind of not going. And I just wonder if it's being on a line with Deneau, who's sort of become a bit of a void for people. I know he kind of got a bit of play with Kokkinen the last couple of games when Julien tried to, you know, juggle the lines a bit to make something happen. But I don't know how I feel about it, sort of circle all the way back. But I mean, someone had to come out, so I guess it's easier if you take out Tatar, who seemingly doesn't seem like he's in the long-term plans of the team after this year. So I guess they won, so deep down I'm okay with it, but I don't know, it just seemed a little odd to me, considering he's your leading point getter last year, the last 2 years, I think. So, yeah. But it worked, so, you know.
Well, they can't sign everybody, and yeah. I mean, I guess you're right, Tatar is definitely someone that they might have to move on for. I think we would lose something if that were to happen. But ultimately, I mean, if he's going to be playing for a contract in the second half of the season, he's going to have to play better than he's played so far. And I just, I don't know. I am actually legitimately worried about Kokkinen. He does not look good at all. I know he had a couple nice passes, and I know that he's apparently working on defensive responsibility, I guess, but he just looks like he still has that sort of floppiness when he's on the ice. He's like, you know, he gets roughed up a little, and he's suddenly on the ice, and I don't know, there's something weird about, my understanding was he had spent a lot of time beefing up and getting stronger, and we were going to sort of see a little more of a hard-nosed game out of him, and I haven't seen it yet. And I, you know, as usual, when players start to struggle in Montreal, we immediately start saying, okay, well, who is this player really? And I saw Connor McKenna of TSN 690 suggest he was a Lars Eller, which Lars Eller's a useful player, don't get me wrong, but that is not a third overall pick. You know, I mean, if that's what you're getting out of that pick, that's not great. I think he's got more offensive upside. I don't think we've seen him settle in. But when you combine that with Nick Suzuki, who I just think hasn't had the flair that we saw, certainly in the playoffs in the fall, through the first 10 games of the season, I am slightly concerned now that what looked like a depth of riches at center looks like a very young, inexperienced, I don't know, positional depth at this point. And it makes it hard to take Deneau out, because who do you put in?
Yeah. Well, that was always the bit of the concern, right, is despite the fact that the kids look good in the playoffs and even the start of the season, if things went wrong, the Canadiens don't have much cover. That's why people would say, you know, trading Max Domi, I think even you mentioned it, trading Max Domi kind of took away that cover, as you, so to speak. So, yeah, I mean, it just seems odd that everyone seems to be hitting a bit of a rough patch altogether. maybe it's just because the schedule was a bit in, I mean, I hate to say fatigue because I know it's not easy playing a game, feels like every other night, and I don't know, it seems like every week there's at least three games in four nights, and I know it's not easy, and like you said, there's barely any time to recover, and there's no time to practice, so it's just, this is the concern, if things start going wrong, or if you know, the young guys in, at center, Kokanyemi and Suzuki kind of struggle, there's no, this is what we they are, so they don't have, there's no plan B, so to speak. So we're gonna have to live with it. It's been. I was gonna say it's been a bit odd how, like I said, everyone's kind of taken a, everyone's kind of hit the cold patch altogether. And I saw someone suggest that Kokanyemi hasn't been the same since he got hit from Dylan Dubé there, the headshot, which could also be a fair point. I just think with Kokanyemi, something's. I would agree with you. He's because he skates kind of awkwardly. It looks like because he's kind of tall. He is kind of all. He always seems to be always on the ice. Like if. I think some, I don't know what it is, but I'm with you. He seems to be always like falling and he seems always like his balance is always off just a little bit. So, I mean, we'll see. It's again, we don't want to over panic, although that's what we do as Canadiens fans after a little a tough four or five game stretch. Maybe they'll hit, maybe you can see, like you said, maybe this week of practice, everyone will be able to sort of refocus their minds and work on some things and things to sort of get back to our, hopefully our normal from the beginning of the year. But yeah, it's just now. It's funny. I was thinking to myself now. I mean, huh, maybe Pierre-Luc Dubois wouldn't be such a bad, wouldn't have been such a bad addition to the team after all. But anyway, I'm just stirring the pot here.
So look, we're gonna get back to things on the ice, but maybe let's just take a second to talk about off ice. We had the first emergence of the COVID concern in the North Division. So sorry, excuse me, the Scotia North Division. I know they paid good money for that. We have to refer to it. The game on, forgive me, Thursday was delayed by
an hour.
By essentially what, an hour?
Yeah.
And that was because they wanted to retest not only one player, but some of the other so-called close contacts. And I don't know about you, but I definitely had the feeling about, like, yeesh, why are they even playing if there's a, if there's concern here? Luckily, we're 4 days out from it, and we haven't sort of heard anything bad. Obviously, I guess maybe the thought was if there was something bad, they had a week coming up, so they were just going to push through. But, you know, I reflect on this, but at the same time I realize, you know, Colorado Avalanche haven't played in like 10 games. It's this is a really weird season when you think about what this is going to do to not only the different divisions, but like sort of the equity within the league in terms of teams playing and making much sense of the standings at the end of the year.
Yeah, we talked about it a bit last week, sort of how, if they can't make up the games, how are they going to figure out, you know, who gets in? Is it going to be winning percentage, not points? Just because, you know, if one team plays 10 more games than another, you know, it stands to reason that you'd have more points, so it's kind of not necessarily fair. Yeah, it's, the weird thing about hockey as opposed to game like baseball or basketball, where it's a bit easier to make up games, I find, just because, you know, you don't want to say there's, it's not physically taxing, but it's not necessarily as violent and physical as hockey. So, you know, in baseball, you can play a doubleheader, even though it sucks. Hockey, you can't. Basketball, it's easier to sort of play a few games in a row. Not that you want to, but, you know, having hockey games three games in a row is insane. People are going to be dropping like flies. It's already bad enough. 3 and 4 and, you know, 4 and 5 or, you know, 6 and 8 or whatever, you know, it's still too much, but you know what I mean? Like the condensed intense schedule they're already playing makes it hard to find games or find space for makeup games. So I don't know what's going to happen. But yeah, I mean, there's always a concern. I mean, even with football, right? Football, at least it's confined to one day, right? So it's usually most of the games are played on Sunday. So, you know, it happened where if you have to push a game into the week, you can. So it's just odd. I don't know what the answer is for the NHL. This is always the risk, and it kind of seems like things went off the rails in New Jersey and in Colorado and I think in Dallas. It's been a bit of a cluster bleep at the moment with how things have gone. They just have, I don't know what the long term, how to figure it out, because it is going to screw with the standings, because there already is a finite amount of time to play the games that they've scheduled, and to try and reschedule games is going to be a complete nightmare, I think.
Yeah, I just, it's something I think we probably are going to revisit
for sure
every week. It was really nice when the North had not been touched by sort of the COVID, broader COVID protocols. Obviously, they have a variety of protocols they're already under, but the additional ones that you know, delay games or in some cases cancel them. I guess another piece of news is the Victor Mete trade bait board is sort of increased. I see a lot more articles of people sort of trying to figure out what might be a good spot for him. I thought he played well last night. Were you paying attention to his game?
Yeah, he played better, I think, last night than he did in his other games that he got in.
Agree.
Yeah, I mean, he's fine. He is what he is. And then I know last time, every time we talk about him, I'm not trying to disparage the player. It's just we know what Victor Mete is. I don't think he's going to be much more than what he already is. So, yeah, he comes in, he looks good, but, I don't think you can insert him into the lineup and let him play as a regular player. I don't think he can – physically, I don't think he can handle it, and I don't know what more he brings. I mean, he has an element the Canadians need in terms of someone who can skate and make a decent first pass. The Canadians definitely are lacking a bit in that area on their own end, but I don't think Victor Mete is
going to – So that's why I bring it up.
Yeah.
The reason I bring that up is because he was able to enter the zone two or three times – in a way that I haven't seen. Romanoff was doing that a little bit earlier. He's not had a great week, I didn't think. But Mete last night entered the zone a couple of times with speed and was able to pass the puck over to the middle, and they were able to be a decent shot off. I'm thinking of two sort of specific examples, but there may have been more. And that's just something that I wonder. I mean, we talk about why Montreal seems so stymied. I think it's because teams have figured out how to set up in the neutral zone so that they're not getting good zone entries. And so that's why you're seeing so many shots on the outside. That's why you're seeing the dreaded dump and chase. That's why, just in general, Montreal may have 38 shots against Edmonton, but only four good scoring chances or whatever. I just think the value of a Mete is that he can remind other teams that defenders with speed can enter the zone and sort of throws up or challenges the initial plan. And I mean, I think you're right. He's not, I don't think he is not only in your top six, but, you know, he's not even a seventh defenseman, I don't think. But as you try to figure out, well, how is it that Montreal is going to be able to diversify how they enter the zone, how they get chances to score, having some speed on the wing is certainly one part. That said, it seems clear that he's on his way out. Do you agree with that? More clear than it did last week when we were sort of like, they'll probably hold on to him because, you know, why would you give him up?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if this was in part a bit of a showcase so teams can sort of see, see what he can do on the ice. I agree that he adds a dimension the Canadiens are lacking. I don't know if we spoke about it at the beginning of the year, but that's one thing. One of the only things I really had a concern about is, yeah, the Canadians are super tough to play against in their own end, but they lack puck moving, good skating defensemen. I mean, they have Jeff Petrie, but, you know, he's sort of the only one. I know Romanoff maybe can do that, but he's still a rookie, and as you pointed out, you know, he's struggling a bit right now, and as a rookie in the NHL, especially a defenseman, there's going to be ups and downs for the season, so. And I know Brett Kulak has shown a bit of an ability to do that, but he doesn't do it consistently. So I don't know if it's a confidence thing or, I don't know, coaching. So Victor Mete is the only other guy on the team that actually seems willing to do that kind of thing. And that's good, but I agree he's probably not in the long-term plans for the Canadiens. I don't know what they're going to get for him. I mean, we've kind of talked about this the last two or three episodes. You know, what his value is, I don't exactly know. I think we agree he's not. Reasonably, he's not a top six defenseman on most teams in the NHL, so I don't think you can expect a huge return. But if he wants to play and he wants a bigger opportunity to get on the ice, then I can totally understand that. Then we've said it's not in Montreal, so it just seems.
A little bit of mea culpa time, Connor.
Sure.
So last week we made some bold predictions. predicted that the Chiefs would win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it didn't work.
And I don't know if anyone was paying attention, but that did not happen.
Nope.
They looked horrible. And unfortunately, I'm going to have to live with seeing Tom Brady's face more.
Yeah.
Yeah, drunk or sober, I have no interest in seeing that dude anymore at all.
You didn't like see Sea Legs Tom Brady after the party?
Sea Legs, that's good. The other thing that I predicted is that we would see not only a goal from Romanoff, but that we see Price return to form. And I think with the exception of last night, I think he looked good last night.
Yes.
But I don't think he looked particularly good on Wednesday. And obviously Jake Allen had his worst outing. I don't really think it was his fault on Thursday. But we have yet to see. I mean, I guess you could say Carey Price stole a game last night by keeping them in it in the latter half of the first period and keeping the score tied in the second. But I don't think we've seen the best of Carey Price, and without jumping on the, you know, is Price times over, you know, whatever bandwagon, I do think I am starting to be a little concerned that you know, the line was always that relying on Price all the time was a problem, and we needed to get him a good backup so that we didn't have to rely on him all the time. Well, now he has that good backup, and now he's not necessarily even starting every Saturday night, and yet we still haven't seen, I don't think we've seen even average Carey Price. I don't know. What's your hot Carey Price take?
You're not wrong. I mean, thing with Carey Price for me, I always find he's, especially lately, it's like he starts the season kind of slow or sluggish, it feels like, where, you know, the Canadians are finding ways to sort of win. Not necessarily despite him, but they're not being held into games because of him. I mean, and then he somehow finds his game, and then, you know, then the Canadians seem to start losing 2-1 games because the offense dries up for whatever reason. So I'm not overly concerned. I know we talked about, you know, this is the kind of year where you can't necessarily, because it's so short and all division games, you can't really, it's not a time for niceties, right? You got to just go. It's almost like at some point you're going to have to say, I'm going with the hot hand. This is what we're doing. We're trying to win, etc. I don't think I'm with you. I don't think he's played his best hockey, just not last night, notwithstanding. But the thing is, he can get better. We saw last night he can play. Obviously, he can play better, and he can play, you know, the role he has done so much, you know, keeping the Canadians in a close game until they find a way to muster up a couple of goals to win. I don't know. Concerned isn't the right word, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on. Because, you know, against Ottawa, when they lost, there's a couple of goals at the end of the first period that he probably should have had. Against Toronto, there were a couple of, you know, not saw, but even though he, I wouldn't say he gave up bad goals against Toronto, just the way he was reacting to the pucks and the way he was moving and sliding in his net seemed a little off. And I've noticed that when Carey Price is not playing at his best, he seems to be, the term is kind of losing his net, where he's kind of sliding all over the place. You'll see him make a save and he slides out of it, like past the goal, like almost to the board. Like obviously not all the way to the boards, but he just seems less in control. And that's, I find when he's not in control, like of his body and his net, something's not right with his game, and something he'll struggle. And you know, you can say two of the goals against Toronto were like these bullet shots, but he probably should have had the Dermott shot and the hole shot. They were, you know, they were really well placed, but these aren't snipers, right? These are guys you should probably make the save on. So we'll see. Like you said, like him, like everyone else, has a week now to sort of get their game in order, and hopefully this game, this last one against Toronto, was maybe a jumping off point for him to sort of round into his typical Carey Price form.
Yeah, and I do think the whole Sportsnet Toronto-based shade that they keep throwing by talking about how he's the best goalie in the league and the best goalie, blah, blah, blah. I just feel like that's like a deliberate effort to mock, because you can't say that Carey Price is the best goalie in the league right now. You can't say it. He certainly has been in the past. He's certainly an elite goaltender. But I don't know. I can't stand it when I see Toronto journalists get on and when they're playing the Leafs talk about the great Carey Price. It almost seems like they're trying to set up you know, the Austin Matthews goal that wins the Leafs the game against the Habs. So maybe I'm reading that in too much. It's very possible, but I don't know.
Well,
there's something about it that doesn't strike me right.
I mean, the thing about the best goalie in the league or whatever that media and people tend to throw out there, I think, way too liberally with any goalie, is it's such an influx thing, right? You know, Carey Price could be the best goalie in the league, but he's not playing well. So it's like you said, he's not playing well, so it's kind of hard to say he's the best. You could say, like, I don't know, maybe Andre Vasilevsky's the best goalie in the league. But I would say outside of, like, I don't know, Dominic Hasek in, like, the late 90s to, like, the early 2000s, it's hard to sort of pinpoint the one best goalie in the league. And that pains me because I hate Dominic Hasek. But you know what I mean? Like, he was clearly a cut above. And I think people like to sort of jump on this thing where Carey Price, I mean, 5 years ago was clearly the best goalie in the league. I would, you know, it's a fine, it'd be hard to sort of argue that point, I think. You know, between 2012 to like 2016, he was probably the best goalie in the world, like everyone would say. And I think it kind of stuck. And I don't know. I like your point that they're trying to set up the Leafs as these world beaters because they score goals against the best goalie in the league. And I agree with their Sportsnet's awful broadcasting practices, considering they're supposed to be a nationally broadcast game for Canada, not a Leafs region broadcast. So it does get a little frustrating, and I find it, everything about watching hockey on Sportsnet for me is insufferable to the commentator, well, except for Chris Cuthbert. I do like Chris Cuthbert, but their studio thing, I hate all of their guys, except for Elliot Friedman. And I hate all the, I don't know. Sportsnet to me, I find, is so budget, despite they have the backing of Rogers. They have the backing, you know, they have all the NHL stuff, and everything feels so amateur hour there. And I hate it. And I'm so happy when I get to watch games on TSN because it's just so much better. But anyway, that's a side point. And
yeah. Well, you don't have the NHL network to have to
that's true.
Suffer through, or God forbid, NESN. The only way to watch a Habs game when they played Boston was to watch it on NESN.
I'm sure Jack Edwards. Jack Edwards isn't an unbiased commentator.
So bad. So really bad. So the Habs have a week off.
Yeah.
They face off against the Toronto Maple Leafs at home next week, which is February 20th. It's going to be weird. I know that this is the last time we have to go for a week without seeing hockey. Or, I mean, obviously there's other games you can watch, but I may have a game on in the background, but I really only watch Canadiens games very, very closely. What are you going to do with your week off, Connor?
Oh, I don't know. Probably watch a lot of TV because what else am I going to do on weeknights? Actually, my wife and I started watching this docuseries about the... I can't remember it. It's about this girl from Vancouver who goes to LA and she disappears in this hotel. Oh, what the hell is it called?
Whoa.
The hotel. Oh, God. Anyway, we started watching it and it's
the Netflix property.
Oh, yeah, Netflix. We've been all in on the Netflix murder mystery docuseries lately. We saw the one about the Night Stalker, which was very, very good, but also very, very horrifying. Like, I knew who this guy was. Like, I'd seen a... Back in, like, the 90s when A&E actually produced half-decent programming, they had a biography on, or, like, a true crime thing about him, so I knew who he was. But I didn't know the whole story, and this guy was crazy in, like, the scariest possible way. But it was a really good documentary, so if you're into that kind of thing, which you might be, it's about the Night Stalker. That's sort of the thing. We caught up on Superstore, which is an NBC, you know, 20-minute comedy, but it's actually quite funny if you've ever had a job dealing with the public. It goes down easy, so it's something to just sort of watch. But yeah, that's probably what we'll be doing. That's, you know, staying out of trouble as best we can. I don't know, what are your plans?
Yeah. Well, I've got a big project that I'm trying to finish up, so I think that'll be most of my days and a couple hours a night. My wife and I started watching The History of Comedy on HBO Max, which was great. Actually, really, really good. Norris, and what else are we doing? Yeah, I don't know. I think that might be it. Do you ever watch The Expanse? Where are you on sci-fi? Suddenly this podcast became about television.
I do like it. I know.
Are you in on
sci-fi? I am in on sci-fi. I haven't watched it. My brother and my sister-in-law watch it. They say it's good, so I'm going to check it out. Just sometimes...
It's really good.
Sometimes convincing my wife to get in on some of the sci-fi stuff can be a bit of a conversation. Not that she's against it, but sometimes it takes a bit of convincing. I know, we're all caught up on, I don't know if you watched Star Trek Discovery, but we watched that, and I had to sort of convince her that she would like it, and she actually really liked it, but you kind of had to be like, you know, let's watch it. I think you'll enjoy it. It's not, you know, it's not 60s camp Star Trek anymore, you know, but, it's on the list. It's just because we have nothing but time now, and then there's nowhere to go, especially at night. There's so many shows that are in the back. Like I was just talking to my brother yesterday, and he was talking about, you know, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which is an Amazon show which people love.
Yeah. Season one's amazing.
And for some reason, I've tried to watch it more than once, and I just can't engage for some reason. I want to watch it, like I know, but it just, every time I turn it on, it I don't know what it is. It's just, I'll get there, but for some reason, it just won't, it didn't grab me for some reason. So I'm going to try again, because he's not the only person that said it. So we'll see, but.
Okay, one more recommendation from me. Ted Lasso.
Oh, is it good?
You know what this
is? It's on Apple TV, right? He's the NFL, he's the football coach that goes to coach soccer in the UK.
It's for a sports fan and like someone steeped in all the tropes, it's hilarious, but also it's just really, really well written. And Ted Lasso was a character that appeared on NBC as
it was a commercial, yeah.
Character spoof. Yeah. Yeah, and then suddenly he's got a show, but I highly recommend it. Is worth the Apple Plus trial subscription or whatever. Sign up and binge it. It's absolutely top notch.
Yeah. Oh, and sorry to go back to that. It's about the Hotel Cecil in LA. That's the documentary about the docuseries. Okay. So there's 4 episodes. Anyway, it's worth a check. I find that stuff fascinating for some reason. I guess I am one of those.
I'm going to start calling you guys true crime apologists.
Oh, well, we definitely, that's one of the things we love. We've gobbled up a bunch of them. There was the one about the Golden Gate killer. He got arrested like 2 years ago, and the woman, she was married to Patton Oswalt before she passed away. She had her whole podcast was based on finding who this guy was, and then it's on HBO. It's called I'll Be Gone in the Dark. Very, again, very, very interesting. Also very disturbing, obviously, but... It's really well done. I mean, HBO doesn't tend not to do things poorly. So, anyway, if you're into that kind of thing, and I know a lot of people are, I don't know if you are or not, or you or your wife, but they're interesting anyway. Really?
Yeah, I'm not opposed. I can get into it. Like, if I get into it, then I get super into it. But I always watch it with, like, a criminology lens, because that's what I studied, and that's what I try to do. And so when that happens, it's like when Liz tries to watch... House.
Well, it's a little different,
like,
but yeah.
She can watch like 5 minutes of it, and then she just gets so angry because they're doing everything wrong. And I try to say, but that's not the point, and it doesn't work. Anyway, hey, listen, I have one question for you before we jump off here, because we're getting close to time here. But I, what is one other team that you're paying attention to in the NHL? Obviously, you're a Habs fan, and you dial in on Habs games. But is there another team that you... that you sort of follow, that you pay attention to, that you'll watch if it's on, or you're track down sort of the score from the night before and what happened?
It used to be, growing up, I really liked Chicago for some reason. Like, I liked Montreal, but it was always Chicago. I guess it was just, I like the uniform, which I don't know if I'm allowed to, if it's insensitive, but I always just, when I grew up, Jeremy Roenick was like my favorite player. I don't know why. It just hit me in the right spot. Like, as a kid growing up, like, it was the right timing, I guess. So I would keep an eye on them, but I am finding this year, because the league is so, all the teams seem to be so isolated in their division, it definitely is a bit harder to sort of, not harder, but I am a little more focused on the Scotia North Division. So it's weird. I don't know if we talked about it, but it feels like there's almost like 4 separate leagues going on at once. But I mean, it's obviously,
totally.
I would have to say it's a bit the Leafs, only because I have friends that are Leafs fans, so it kind of just organically kind of comes up where you're finding out what's going on. I get it, although I'm happy to say that they are not insufferable Leaf fans. They're logical, and you can actually have a conversation with these people about hockey and not have it go off the rails like you might on Twitter with people who are you know, just a bit, whatever, Twitter. So it's, yeah, it makes, honestly, it makes the Leafs a little more tolerable, but it is also a lot more fun when things go down the drain for Toronto to sort of have someone to, you know, give it to a bit. So, but it just, yeah.
Most of my teams that I follow are related to my fantasy.
Yeah.
And so really, like, it just becomes an excuse to watch other games because I convince myself that if I watch, you know, Alexander Barkov's going to definitely score.
That's how it works. He knows you're watching, yeah.
Or Markstrom's going to get my get the shutout I need to win that week. But, like, I do find myself paying attention to Vancouver and Calgary. Vancouver, because I just think it's an interesting story. There's so much talent, and yet they haven't been able to put it together.
Just say it.
Calgary, because I
just say it's Quinn Hughes. We know it's Quinn Hughes is why you watch Vancouver.
Well, yeah, I have. I mean, he was my number one pick, so yes, absolutely. And all that guy does is score points.
There you go.
All he does. That's his whole deal. But I'm also interested in Florida. So I pay attention to Calgary, Vancouver. But for some reason, I'm just fascinated by the Quenneville comeback and the team that they've tried to build there. And, yeah, I don't know. It always fascinates me that Aaron Ekblad went number one overall, and I just always like try to think about what the league would have been like when that would have seemed like your right move. Anyway, it's random, I know, but it is interesting to like think about the league and then think about cases. I love watching the
Avalanche. I was going to say the team I forgot about because they haven't played in almost 2 weeks is Colorado.
Right. Right.
Although I don't know where do you come down on those those blue pants. Not a fan of those blue pants they wear though.
No, I'm out on
that. But yeah, I mean Nathan MacKinnon is like an absolute joy to watch. So he like I think in the bubble playoffs last year, I really jumped on board too. I really was kind of pulling for them after the Habs got eliminated. So yeah, Colorado was a lot of fun. I'm with you on them.
So we have a week off. It's hard to know if coming back next week to talk about one game makes a lot of sense, but maybe we'll make that a game time decision depending on, you know, if Mete gets traded or...
Yeah, if there's any big news, I think we'll definitely hop on. I don't know what that news would be, but if there's something, we'll definitely hop on. But yeah, for one game, doesn't make sense. So if no big news happens, don't expect us to jump to have an episode next week, and are we back again in 2 weeks' time, which... I jump him.
And we'll have so many hot takes that we just won't have.
So, yeah, so we'll just I'm going to jump in on the date, we'll probably be back publishing one, recording on the 20th, out on the 1st. So don't expect one on the 22nd. That's all. Unless, again, something big happens.
I think that makes sense.
So with that in mind, I hope everyone enjoys...
Okay, my friend.
Yeah, I hope everyone enjoys their week off. I hope everyone relaxes, resets their brain, gets refocused, works on a few things you need to work on. To make yourself a better fan, to come back for the better Canadians we're going to see next Saturday. And on that note, I'm Connor LaPalme saying have a nice week, everyone. Johannes?
Keep your stick out of the ice because it's too cold and it'll get stuck.
Sounds good.
Bye, Connor.
This has been the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Join us next week. Until then... See you on the ice.